A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He just moved apartments and went looking for industrial Euroboxes, those 60 by 40 by 23 centimeter plastic totes. Local price, $25 to $30 a box. He needs maybe 40 of them. Tries to source by the pallet, no dice. Goes on Alibaba, and at the high end, 5,000 units plus the unit price drops to 50 cents. Same category of box, same Chinese manufacturing origin. And he's staring at this golf and asking, what's going on? Is the high volume price a real yardstick for what the thing actually costs to make? Because if it is, that's a 6,000% markup from factory to retail.
The answer is, mostly yes, but also deeply no. Which is the kind of answer that makes people want to throw things at us, but stick with me.
That's the show.
The 50 cent price is directionally real. You can go on Alibaba right now and find Euroboxes at that quantity for somewhere between 50 and 80 cents FOB China, and that price includes the factory's profit. They're not losing money. So the actual cost to manufacture, raw plastic, mold amortization, machine time, labor, is probably somewhere around 35 to 45 cents a unit at that scale, which means Daniel's instinct is right. At some fundamental level, this box is a 40 cent object.
Yet he's standing in front of a local supplier being asked for $30, which is not 40 cents. So what is the other $29.60 buying?
That's the question that unpacks the entire industrial supply chain. And I think the most honest way to frame it is, the high volume price tells you what the box costs when you are a warehouse operator in Shenzhen buying a container load. The $30 price tells you what the box costs when you are a human being in Jerusalem who wants 40 of them, right now, and someone else has done all the work of getting them there.
The price you pay is a function of your position in the supply chain, not the intrinsic value of the object. That's the thing Daniel is bumping into, and it feels like being gouged because the spread is so wide. But it's not one actor taking a 6,000% margin. It's layer after layer after layer, each taking a cut that, in isolation, looks reasonable.
And we should walk through those layers because once you see them, the $30 stops looking like a scam and starts looking like the inevitable cost of moving a 40-cent piece of plastic halfway around the world in small quantities.
Let's crack open that $30 box and see what it's actually made of, starting with the factory floor.
The factory floor is where the numbers get genuinely wild. So an injection molding machine producing a box this size, 60 by 40 by 23 centimeters, runs a cycle time of about 30 to 60 seconds. One mold, one machine, 1,000 plus units a day. The raw material is polypropylene or HDPE, and at the contract rates factories pay, we're talking maybe 15 to 25 cents of resin per box.
Which already tells you something. Even if you doubled that for labor, machine time, and amortizing the mold, which runs $5,000 to $15,000, you're still under 50 cents.
And the mold cost is the silent killer in small production runs. Spread that $15,000 mold over 5,000 units, it's $3 a box. Spread it over 100,000 units, it's 15 cents. The 50 cent Alibaba price only exists because someone already committed to enormous volume. The factory isn't selling you a box. They're selling you a tiny slice of a machine that's been running nonstop for 6 months.
The high volume price is a real yardstick for manufacturing cost, but only if you also inherit the volume that makes that cost possible. Daniel's instinct to subtract the margin from the 50 cents and call that the true cost, that's directionally correct. But the number he'd land on, that 40 cents, assumes a factory that already has the mold paid off, resin contracts locked in, and a production line that never stops.
That's the first crack in the yardstick idea. The manufacturing cost isn't a fixed property of the object, it's a curve. At 40 units, the per unit cost might be $5 to $10 just to produce, because you're not amortizing anything efficiently. The 50 cent price is the asymptote, the cost when volume approaches infinity.
Which means the real question isn't what the box costs to make. It's what the box costs to make available to one person in Jerusalem who wants 40 of them. and that number has almost nothing to do with the factory floor.
Once that box leaves the factory floor, the first thing that happens is it gets on a boat, and here's where the cost stack starts compounding. You've got your 50-cent box FOB China. Sea freight for a 40-foot container, and these boxes nest so you can fit thousands, adds maybe 2 to 5 cents per unit if you're shipping at scale. Then customs brokerage, duties on plastic articles, typically 3 to 5%. Port handling, drayage to a warehouse. By the time that box is sitting in a U.S. or Israeli distribution center, the landed cost is probably 70 cents to a dollar.
The importer has already doubled the factory price just getting the thing across water and through customs, and they haven't sold it to anyone yet.
And the importer's business is not a charity. They're carrying inventory, tens of thousands of boxes sitting in a warehouse that costs rent, insurance, labor. They're extending credit terms to distributors who might pay in 60 or 90 days. They're absorbing currency risk if they paid the factory in yuan and are selling in dollars or shekels. 100% markup at this stage from that 70-cent landed cost to $1.40 wholesale is not unusual. It's thin, actually, when you factor in the carrying costs.
We're at $1.40. We've gone from 50 cents to $1.40, and nobody's done anything predatory. That's just the cost of moving a box from Shenzhen to a warehouse in Tel Aviv or Los Angeles and holding it there until someone wants it.
This is where the stack really starts to ladder up. The next layer is the regional distributor. They buy from the importer at $1.40, but they're not buying 5,000 units of one SKU. They're buying a catalog, maybe 50 different sizes, colors, lid types. They have a sales team making calls, a showroom or catalog, a warehouse with pick-and-pack operations, and critically, they're the ones who break pallets. That's the service Daniel is actually paying for when he walks into a local supplier and wants 40 boxes.
Breaking a pallet sounds trivial. It's not trivial.
It's shockingly expensive. Think about what happens when a distributor receives a pallet of 40 boxes. If they sell the whole pallet to one customer, the labor cost is essentially forklift in, forklift out, maybe 5 minutes of work. If they sell individual boxes to 40 different walk-in customers, someone has to unwrap the pallet, pull one box, maybe clean it, package it, process a separate transaction, handle a separate payment. The labor per unit goes from pennies to dollars, and that's before you account for the inventory that sits there for months, because walk-in demand is slow and unpredictable.
The distributor who sells 10,000 units a year to one warehouse chain has a radically different cost structure than the one selling 50 units a year to random people renovating their apartments. Same box, completely different business.
The distributor marks up from that $1.40 to somewhere around $3 to $5 wholesale. Again, 100 to 200%. And they're probably running single-digit net margins after all those operational costs.
Then you get to the retailer. The local industrial supply shop, the hardware store, the online seller listing on a local platform. They buy at $3.50 wholesale, and they're now dealing with the most expensive part of the entire chain, the individual customer who wants one box, or maybe 40 today.
The retailer's costs are brutal at small scale. Shelf space or warehouse space that could be holding faster, moving inventory. Staff time to answer questions. Does this lid fit? What's the weight rating for a sale that might net them $15 in gross margin? Packaging for retail. The cost of being wrong about demand and sitting on 100 boxes that take 18 months to sell. A 50 to 100% retail markup is standard, and on slow-moving industrial items, it's often higher. So, $3.50 wholesale becomes $7 to $10 retail cost to the store, and then they mark it up to $25 or $30 to actually make the math work.
We've gone from 50 cents to $1.40 at the importer, to $3.50 at the distributor, to maybe $7 or $8 as the retailer's cost basis, to $25 on the shelf. And at every single step, someone is adding a margin that, in isolation, is completely unremarkable. 100% here, 50% there. No one is cackling in a back room.
The gobbling? Daniel sensed, and I love that word, it captures the feeling perfectly, is not one giant mouth. It's a fractal. 5 or 6 layers, each taking a cut that any business person would call reasonable, maybe even thin. But compound them, 1.5 to the 6th power is about 11. A 50% markup at 6 layers turns a 50-cent box into a $5 box. Add retail's higher margin at the end, and $25 is not a conspiracy. It's arithmetic.
This is the thing that's useful about Daniel's yardstick question. If you use the 50 cent price as your baseline and work forward through the actual services being provided, shipping, warehousing, credit, pallet breaking, retail availability, the $30 becomes legible. It's not that the box is worth $30, it's that making the box available to you in the quantity you want at the moment you want it costs $29.60 more than making the box.
There's a great parallel in a completely different product category. A plastic bottle cap, the kind on a 2-liter soda, costs about 10 cents to manufacture at scale. You can buy them by the thousand from a packaging supplier for 12 to 15 cents. Walk into a small hardware store looking for a single replacement cap and you'll pay 50 cents to a dollar. Same compounding of small quantity handling costs. Nobody's running a bottle cap cartel. It's just that selling one cap to one person is a wildly inefficient transaction.
The bottle cap is the Eurobox in miniature, and I think that's the mental model shift Daniel's question points toward. When you see a 6,000% spread, your instinct is to look for the villain. But the real story is that industrial supply chains are optimized for industrial buyers. If you're not one, you pay a premium for the system to bend toward you. And the premium is enormous, not because anyone is greedy, but because bending the system is expensive.
Which brings us to the trap Daniel almost walked into. The Alibaba listing at 50 cents is real. The price is real. The factory is real. But the price is attached to a 5,000 unit minimum order. That's $2,500 before anything leaves the factory floor.
That's where the yardstick breaks for a human being. Daniel needs 40 boxes. At $30 local, that's $1,200. Boxes in hand, maybe same day. If he chases the Alibaba price, he's committing to buying 5,000 boxes he doesn't need, just to get the per unit number down.
We haven't even added shipping. 5,000 euro boxes, even nested, is multiple pallets. Sea freight from China to Israel, customs clearance, port fees, inland trucking, you're easily adding another $500 to $1,000. Maybe more depending on fuel surcharges and whether you need a customs broker who actually answers their email. Suddenly, the cheap option is a $3,000+ gamble.
Versus $1,200 and the boxes are there. The high volume price is a real number, but it's behind a door that requires infrastructure to open. You need a loading dock, a forklift, a warehouse to store 4,960 boxes you don't need, and the stomach for quality variance on a shipment you can't inspect until it arrives.
Quality variance is not theoretical. The 50-cent box and the $30 box might come from the same region of China, but the local supplier has already filtered out the bad batches. They've done the quality control, rejected the shipment where the corners were warped or the stacking lugs didn't align. When you buy direct from an Alibaba factory you've never visited, you're the quality control department. And if half the boxes are unusable, your per unit savings just evaporated.
Daniel's instinct is directionally correct. The high volume price minus a thin margin gets you close to manufacturing cost. But practically, for a 40 box buyer, it's useless. The number is real, and also completely inaccessible. Like knowing that a barrel of crude oil costs $70 when you're trying to fill up your car.
That's exactly the right analogy. The crude oil price is true. The gas station price is also true. The difference isn't a scam. It's refining, transportation, storage, retail overhead, and taxes. Same structure, different product. And here's the deeper thing about the gobbling Daniel noticed. It's not just that each layer adds margin, it's that each layer's margin compounds on top of the previous layer's margin.
Walk me through the math on that compounding.
Say you have 5 layers between factory and consumer. Each layer adds a 20% margin. That doesn't mean the final price is the factory price plus 100%. It means the price multiplies by 1.2 at each step. 1.2 to the fifth power is about 2.5. So a 50-cent box becomes $1.25. But if each layer takes 50%, which is honestly more realistic for some of these steps, 1.5 to the fifth power is about 7.6. 50 cents becomes 3.80. And if you have 6 or 7 layers with retail's higher margin at the end, $25 to $30 is not mysterious. It's compound interest working against the buyer.
That fractal nature is what makes the spread feel so vast. No single actor is taking a 6,000% cut, but 5 or 6 actors, each taking a reasonable cut. reasonable for the service they're actually providing, produces a 6,000% total spread, and your brain doesn't naturally do exponential math, so it looks like theft.
This is also why local suppliers can't just buy at the 50-cent price and undercut everyone. They don't have the volume to hit that price either. A local industrial supply shop isn't buying 5,000 euro boxes. They're buying maybe 100 from a regional distributor who bought 1,000 from an importer who bought a container load from the factory. The local shop's cost basis might be $7 or $8 per box. They're not sitting on a secret 50-cent source and laughing at you.
They're in the same fractal, just a few layers deeper than Daniel, but nowhere near the factory floor. The price you pay is a function of your position in the supply chain. And your position is determined by volume, relationships, and risk tolerance, not by how cleverly you shop.
This is why B2B procurement is an entire profession. A good procurement manager at a large warehouse chain isn't just good at negotiating. They know how to collapse the layers. They buy direct from factories, not distributors. They commit to annual volumes that unlock the 50-cent price. They handle their own logistics or negotiate hard on freight. They carry the inventory risk internally instead of paying someone else to carry it. The savings aren't 10 or 20%, they're 80 or 90%.
There's a middle ground that's actually relevant to someone like Daniel. I found a case. Small warehouse operator in the Midwest needed about 1,000 euro boxes for a facility reorganization. Couldn't hit the 5,000 MOQ alone. So they formed a buying co-op with 5 other local businesses, pulled their orders, hit the MOQ, bought direct from a factory in China. After shipping and customs, their per unit cost landed around $4 versus $25 locally. Saved about 80%.
That's the co-op model. It's not new. Agricultural co-ops have done this for a century, but it's underused in small industrial purchasing. The barrier isn't the concept, it's the coordination cost. Someone has to find the other buyers, negotiate the order, handle the logistics, deal with customs, and distribute the boxes when they arrive. That's work. And most people would rather pay the $25 than become an unpaid logistics coordinator for 6 months.
Which is itself a form of markup. You're paying the supply chain to not have to become a supply chain professional. And for most people, that's the right trade-off. Daniel's 40-box need is probably too small even for a co-op to make sense. But the principle scales.
If you can't buy 5,000 boxes and a co-op is too much hassle, what can you actually do? Let's get practical, because I think there are 4 things here that actually help.
First one's about the yardstick itself. Daniel asks whether the high volume price tells you what the thing is worth. The answer is yes, but only if you also account for the cost of volume, shipping, duties, quality risk, carrying 5,000 boxes you don't need. Use that 50-cent number as a ceiling on manufacturing cost, not a floor for what you should expect to pay. It tells you the box is a 40-cent object. It doesn't tell you how to get one for 40 cents.
Second insight, and this is the one most people miss. Don't chase the 50-cent price. Chase the sweet spot. For Daniel, the local supplier's single unit price is $30, but the pallet price, 40 units, drops to somewhere around $18 to $22 per box. That's a 30% discount just for buying one pallet instead of individual units. The biggest marginal savings in any supply chain are almost always in that first volume break, not the last one.
Going from one box to 40 saves you more per box than going from 40 to 5,000. The curve is steepest at the bottom, and 40 boxes is actually a quantity a human being might use.
Third, explore the alternative channels. Surplus dealers, liquidation auctions, warehouses that are upgrading their fleet. Used Euro boxes, and these things are nearly indestructible, routinely sell for $5 to $10 each. A distribution center replacing 1,000 boxes doesn't want to list them one at a time on eBay. They want them gone. If you're willing to take boxes that have a few scuffs, you can slash the price by 70 or 80% without ever touching a factory in China.
The fourth one is maybe the most useful mental shift. When you see a gigantic price gap, the 50-cent Alibaba listing versus the $30 local shelf, don't ask who's ripping me off. Ask what service am I paying for? The answer is usually inventory risk, credit terms, small quantity handling, quality filtering, and local availability. Those are real things that cost real money. The markup isn't zero-sum exploitation. It's the price of convenience and immediacy.
Once you can name the services, you can decide which ones you actually need. Do you need the boxes tomorrow, or can you wait 8 weeks for sea freight? Do you need brand new, or are used ones fine? Do you need someone else to handle customs, or are you willing to learn? Each service you strip out brings the price down. Each one you keep, you pay for. The $30 box isn't a rip-off, it's a bundle. And you get to decide whether to unbundle it, which raises the question I keep turning over. Platforms like Alibaba and Amazon Business are making it easier than ever for small buyers to see the factory price, to connect directly with manufacturers, to bypass whole layers of the distribution chain. Are we watching the slow collapse of the multi-tier model? Or does something structural keep that spread wide no matter how transparent the market gets?
I think the spread survives because the cost isn't just about information. It's about physics. A 40-foot container of Euroboxes still needs to cross an ocean, clear customs, and get broken down into quantities humans actually want. No platform eliminates the forklift. No algorithm makes a pallet of 40 boxes cheaper to ship than a pallet of 5,000. The transparency is real, but the logistics don't care how good your search results are.
The logistics are stubbornly scale-dependent. Container shipping, warehouse labor, last-mile delivery, these don't get cheaper per unit when you're moving small quantities. If anything, the rise of e-commerce has made small-quantity logistics more expensive, because now everyone expects two-day delivery and perfect packaging. The platforms reveal the price gap. They don't close it.
Daniel's $30 box isn't going to become a $5 box just because he can see the 50-cent listing. The gap is real, because the work between those two numbers is real. And that's the final thought I keep coming back to. The $30 price tag isn't a scam. It's a mirror. It reflects exactly where you stand in the economic food chain. Your volume, your timeline, your infrastructure, your risk tolerance. Understanding that is the first step to moving up it.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
By the 1900s, Hokkaido produced over 60% of Japan's peppermint oil, thanks to the menthol-rich Arvensis variety that thrived in its volcanic soil.
60% of Japan's peppermint oil? From Hokkaido?
That's going to sit with me.
This has been My Weird Prompts. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps more people find the show. Our producer is Hilbert Flumingtop. I'm Korn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. We'll be back next week.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.